Welcome to the ISO Manila 2015 podcast. This podcast contains live recording from ISO Manila 2015, which took place in Impact Hub, Manila, Philippines on July 10 to 11, 2015. We will be featuring guest speakers on various startup topics from all over the world. So whether you attended it or not, here is your chance to learn from the best in the industry. This episode is called Startup as Upstarts, the disrupted role of startups in an era of integration. This will be spoken by attorney Anthony Abad, our very own Isaac alumnus from Trade Advisory Group. So Tony, as he is called, specializes in international trade law and provides technical advice and assistance to multinational corporations, business enterprises, international organizations, government, and academic institutions on matters of international trade policy and regulation. He is a seasoned resource speaker on international trade law and competition policy, and he has authored books and prepared studies and articles for various organizations, including the World Bank, USAID, UNDP, the Asia Foundation, the Asian Institute of Management, Philippine Expert, and the PDP Australia. So let's hear it now from Mr. Tony Abad.
It's basically my sort of my mantra or the equation that I've been guiding myself with maybe since a little more than 20 years, maybe. I'll tell you a little bit of what I do to give a sense of what I want to impart to the startup community. I just thought, while I was in bed and not feeling well, I thought of that. I tried to think of a sexy title because people are after sexiness. And then we said, okay, Startup as Upstart. And then the original title was really about ASEAN and regional integration. And also, I said, there has to be a role for, startups. So what does it mean when I say startup as upstart and that disruptive role? Okay, because you're supposed to disrupt. Okay, and by disrupting, you end up improving the overall ecosystem. It might be counterintuitive, especially for those who are used to the predictable, who expect things to be stable and fixed and in order. And you're actually advocating chaos and disorder by when you say the word disruptive. But I'll try to get to that. So I'll just try to expand on these two concepts, integration and competition. So first, integration, which I believe the organizers of this event wanted to bring in as a theme. No? The fact that we are integrating as a region, Asia Pacific, Southeast Asia in particular is coming closer together into what would be a quasi single economy, which is the ASEAN economic community. There's a bigger picture, which I gave a talk on yesterday at AIM, which is about the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation, okay, or APEC, which the Philippines is hosting this year, and also about, you know, that theme of integration. And then, of course, there's the larger world that we're looking at. There are other free trade areas and regional trading arrangements that are coming up, such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. There is the Regional Cooperation Economic Partnership here also within East Asia. There's a Pacific Alliance over in South America and Mexico. And then, of course, you have the World Trade Organization, which is also talking about integration globally or multilaterally. So all of these are trending towards really a world that is coming closer together. And, okay, especially for the Filipinos in the audience, the trend towards integration is really not something that's really being forced on us. We keep thinking that, you know, oh, we're so poor us, you know, we have to, you're forced to follow ASEAN, we're forced to follow APEC. No, no. ASEAN and APEC is just following the trend. The trend is really towards human beings interacting closer together. We want to interact with each other. And then human endeavor is pushing it towards that trend. And then you have technology improving as we speak. Every minute, something is being invented, something new that brings us closer together. Telecommunications and transportation in particular make the world smaller. And whether we like it or not, we are integrating. So there is this whole trend towards integration. Now, I was with the government for a while. It gave me a view of how things are on the governance side. Then I retired early from the Arroyo administration before Hyatt 10. For my own reasons, but what I did was I tried to be a startup myself by coming up with a consulting firm and law firm sort of rolled into one that would promote integration, that would give advice and help firms deal with the issue of integration. And that's why we set up this firm, Trade Advisors. At the time, we had that long name, the TA, Trade Advisory Service. But what Trade Advisors was trying to do is really that, both advocate, advise, and provide guidance and help when there are disputes and problems and conflicts that arise because of integration issues. Unfortunately, unlike many of you in the room, I am an example of an unsuccessful entrepreneur. I am, I guess you have to have both failures and successes. So I am a failure in terms of the startup. I've been trying to start up since 2005, and it's been 10 years. I'm still starting up. Okay, and I don't know if it's because of bad habits. I'm not the predictable type of person. Sometimes you don't even know what time I'm going to arrive, right? So I'm not that. I'm not one of these people you know who get up at 4 in the morning, go jogging, read all the newspapers, you know. High-powered, etc., blah, blah, blah. No, no, I'm quite the opposite. And maybe that's one reason. The other reason I saw, and which also bothered me, is that if I were in another country where there was more enlightened policy, where the people embraced integration and really took advantage of it, I probably would have made a killing, even with my bad habits. So I think the problem was here. The Philippines still is holding back, somehow is not taking advantage of this big wave of, you know, we're talking about trillions of dollars moving back and forth. And here we seem to have this sort of closed, you know, this sort of world, this little world that seems to be controlled by a few people and few firms. And the opportunities are not, you know, really exploding the way they should, the way the rest of the world is. And that bothered me. And that said, you know, so I said, okay, well, I'm still not successful. I'm just being able to pay salaries almost on a weekly basis and keep ourselves afloat. Up to today, I'm still doing the same thing. But I still feel that I have to advocate this, that I have to advocate the opening up about the whole wave of integration that has to happen. And the Philippines is a good poster child because we are one of the few countries that are still holding back. Now you might say, "What? You know, I have a lot of Filipino friends, you know, our guests would say, and they're very open-minded. Like my colleagues in ISEC, probably the most globally oriented Filipinos, right? But still, as a country and as an economy, we are not a poster child for this new world of integration. In fact, we seem to be the one that's holding it back. So what is it? And it is, you know, okay, now as a lawyer, then you look, what are the details? Because in the details, of course, you will see our friend, the devil, okay? And the details are a set of laws that reflect a certain set of policies that have a certain effect, an actual effect. And the laws, if you look at the laws of the Philippines and maybe the laws of certain countries in the Asia-Pacific, Southeast Asia, you see that they still restrict rather than encourage. They still hold back and reserve and protect rather than create inclusivity, you know, create opportunity. For example, our constitution, the Philippine constitution, restricts certain types of investment. Those investments are key. And I think the big investors are holding back because of that. But, you know, they look at our constitution and say, hey, you're the only country in the world that puts restrictions on investment in your constitution. There's something wrong there. Okay? So you have to look at all of these and you have to deal with it. Then you look at laws and our experience. Now, we've also set up a law firm, Abad Alcantara Aquino. We nickname ourselves TradeLawyers.ph. And my law partner, Christine Alcantara, I don't know if she's here already, is dedicated. Now, we realize that lawyers also have to stand up for the startups. Because it's so difficult. We've had some experience already in helping CES also with Impact Hub and a few other firms. We come up with a good arrangement. No? In other words, we're sort of, it's like we're investing in the future. But you realize that there's so many small regulations and laws and restrictions that hold back the small player. That you come here with, you know, with bright and optimistic eyes, and you realize that in the end, you know, when it's at the end of the day and you're trying to file registration documents and pay taxes and all of that is holding back the entrepreneurial spirit. And yet, if you look at other countries, it's easy to benchmark. Other countries have very simple laws, very simple regulations that encourage entrepreneurship, that encourage the startup community. But we can't just sit back and sort of complain. We can't just keep, you know, sort of scratching our heads or picking our noses and say, oh, poor me, you know, it's so hard here in the Philippines, it's so hard in this country or that country. And that's where I guess I want to give this message that, you know, it's human and, you know, how economies and societies improve is really how engaged its communities are in its improvement. So you have another role to play aside from setting up your business. And it is to create and to improve the ecosystem in which you are going to thrive in and hopefully prosper. Okay. So when you see the Philippines or any other legal system and policy system and regulatory system as being a hurdle or obstacle to the renaissance that is the startup community, don't accept it as is. Fight it. Do something about it. Okay? Rise. You're the upstarts. Don't accept whatever they're dishing out to you. Okay? Because you also have to create the ecosystem that you're going to thrive in. No? Now, the other important concept is competition. We recently passed a competition law here in the Philippines. And up to now, I'm still having to explain to people why it's important. In the US, it's known as antitrust. And it is a standard feature now in all developed countries and most developing countries. Even in Africa, even in the Pacific Islands, they have competition laws. What is a competition law? Competition law is basically saying that if there are anti-competitive practices or acts on being perpetrated by certain big firms or small firms, okay, then it is wrong. It is not allowed. It is a violation of the law. Now, why do you put that law in place? Well, economics is perfect, but the world is not. Okay? So there is no perfect law of supply and demand going on. There is what you call market failure. There is what you call the concentration of economic power. And to be honest, and I mean, if you think about it, what is a firm, a for-profit firm after? Profit, right? The bottom line is that you need to make money and you need to actually capture a niche. What is capturing a niche? It's also creating a monopoly, in a sense. Being the only one there, the first mover, the one that has the exclusive right over a particular technology or a particular market. And that's fine, that's fine. I mean, that's, in fact, you should be driven by that, you know, that you want to be the, you know, you want to be the one who introduced this, and I want to be ahead of the pack. And that's the way Google thinks, that's the way Facebook thinks. Always wants to be ahead of the pack, always make sure its algorithms are a step ahead of everybody else. And that's fine. And that is because it's driven by competition. And your niche is achieved because of superior technology and innovation. The problem is, in an imperfect market, when you have dominance and you abuse that dominance. What is abuse of dominance? First, what is dominance? It means that you have control over the market. You can act as a firm without regard, without bothering about the concern, you know, what consumers and competitors will do or say. You have that independence of action, which means that you're probably more than 50% market share. You also have a high concentration index. Okay? You're basically able to do what you want. Now, how do you abuse it? Okay? Because being big is by itself is not wrong. It's abusing the bigness. How do you abuse it? You either exclude, so it's exclusionary behavior towards competitors, or abusive behavior towards consumers. So if the consumer feels that I have no choice, there's something wrong here. The price is too high. I'm benchmarking it against my friends in other countries in Southeast Asia, and I can't go anywhere. I talk to somebody in customer care, and you know, they just give me the same spiel over and over. Does this sound familiar, guys? Various products and services. Okay. If you feel that you have no choice, then there's probably something wrong, and you're probably being abused by the dominant player. The other problem, of course, is when competitors, competing firms, come together. What they call agreements. You can have horizontal agreements, which is cartels, price fixing, bid rigging arrangements, meaning, you know, secretly getting together or agreeing that, okay, we're not going below this price. Okay? That's our agreement. Or we have a uniform price. So these guys have no choice. So it's sort of a collusion, that's the term, concerted action. And then you can also have agreements along the supply chain, what they call vertical agreements. You restrict competition at different stages of the supply chain. I don't know if you've probably heard of cases like the Microsoft Explorer case, Explorer versus Netscape before, when Microsoft was restricting other search engines from riding on the Microsoft system. Just examples, no? But in other countries where you see this vigorous sort of community effort denouncing and looking at anti-competitive acts as something wrong, unacceptable, this is where you see the entrepreneurial spirit really coming up. Because, you know, when you have vigorous competition, that is where you have what you achieve. What you achieve is what you call dynamic efficiency. The market becomes more efficient, but there's a dynamism that goes with that efficiency, which actually encourages people to innovate, to look for a new or better way of doing things because of the sheer pressure of competition. And that's why competition is so important. Where you don't have competition, you will not have entrepreneurship. Certainly not the kind of entrepreneurship that we want. Vigorous, revolutionary, explosive, you know, renaissance of creativity that changes the world. Because that's what you are supposed to do. As startups, you are here because you are not satisfied with sitting in a job and, I don't know, stamping something or Xeroxing. Okay. But that's what I used to do in my first job. It had a nice title to it, technical something something, project development services, blah, blah, blah. Could you photocopy this? Or? Sure, and I'll collate it as well. So I developed those skills, no, as an employee. But then, I don't know. I also am one of these people who just cannot work in a large organization. Some people are suited to it, and that's also necessary. But I think you are here because you want to create something new. And you also want to create something new in an environment that encourages that newness. And that's why, think of yourselves not just as setting up a firm that will do something great, but think of also creating a great ecosystem within which you're going to work in. And that means you do your homework and understand the outside world, the ecosystem. So what is affecting us? Integration. For those in Southeast Asia, think about ASEAN and the implications of the harmonizing of different regulations. That products can now move freely within the region, that investments should be able to also go into any country, from any country within ASEAN. And that even outside ASEAN, there are forces that are also coming in to, you know, to bring in more investment, more technology, more ideas. Startup community, I am sure you know this and understand this well. The reason why you have to get together as an international community is because you want to germinate ideas coming from all over the world, not just Southeast Asia, not just Asia Pacific. So integration, embrace it. But integration comes with certain risks. And you mitigate that by understanding the concept of competition. If there's a competition law, do not fear it. In fact, make use of it. Okay. If there's a competition law, question, why are my power rates so high? Why are my telecoms rates so high? Why are my water rates so high? Who's controlling everything? Okay. Maybe that should be broken up, and there should be an openness that allows prices to go down. Maybe food shouldn't be priced so high as well. And there's always some anti-competitive act that keeps the prices up and the quality poor and availability in existing. So always think about that. Integration is changing our lives. Embrace it and then promote it. Competition, remember that we have to thrive in a free enterprise system, a system of market, a market-driven system. Okay? And that's why when you have the law of supply and demand working properly, that is where you're going to see the renaissance of the startup community. And I think my time is up. Thank you very much.
So there you heard it from Mr. Tony Abad himself. Stay tuned for our series of leadership roundtables in the next few episodes.